You are listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production.
Bonus. Something extra that is good. B-O-N-U-S. Bonus.
What's up, people? Welcome into another episode of Two Peas. I'm so excited that you joined us as always. Thank you for tuning in this week. And if you've been tuning in lately, you know that this month is all about Halloween. It's kind of spooky, horror-related top five countdowns. And today is no exception. And this is a one that I'm very, very excited about. You know, you could do top five horror movies. You could do top five horror killers. Which actually we probably will at some point, but it's kind of a niche thing that we're doing today. I want to bring in my guest because I feel like he's perfect for this category. Let's welcome him in. He's been on before, I want to say two or three times, but my buddy Jeff from Cadavercast. What's up, man? Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Yeah, I think this is three.
It's number three.
This is the third time.
Yeah, because we did Best Picture Oscar winners, and then
Tim Burton.
That's right, Tim Burton characters, which Al gave a list for, which was great.
Yep.
Did he hear that, by the way, when I played his little clip?
Yeah, he heard that.
That was awesome. My son was like sad. He was like, why didn't you ask me for mine? And I'm like, bro, you've seen like two Tim Burton movies, you know? But that was a lot of fun to do with you, and always great to have you on the show, man. Why don't you tell everyone, in your words, kind of what countdown we're doing today? What's the topic today?
So we are doing the top five horror movie kills, kill scenes.
Yep, kill scenes. And we're going to dive into our list in a minute. But before we do that, I mean, we were talking a little bit online last night, and you'll find out why when we get into my honorable mentions later in the show. But I don't know, do you see a difference in, like, if you say horror movie kills or horror movie kill scenes, or if you say horror movie death scenes? Like, is there?
Yeah.
What's the difference there? Because I know we ended up going with kill scenes.
Yeah. So I had had, like, because you'd said originally, like, kills, and you were like, let's call it deaths. And I was like, there's a big difference there. And to me, like, a death scene, it's about the character, you know, it's about the character who dies. And so, you know, I started thinking of things like, you know, like really powerful moments in the movies where, like, the character's death means something,
right? Like, you're connected to the character that died, as opposed to a random girl on a campsite or whatever.
Exactly. Right. And a kill scene is like the kill itself is the centerpiece. Yep. Whereas, you know, like Pet Sematary, you know, you got Gage who gets killed. And that's like, that's horrifying because it's this little kid. Whereas Friday the 13th may have better kills because he can wrap somebody up in a sleeping bag and hit him on a tree, you know? It's a distinction, but like a subtle but important, I think, to...
Well, you know, I appreciate you kind of pointing that out last night, and you were kind of saying that, and then I felt bad because I'm like, no, don't do that. change your list. And this is like 12 hours ago, so I apologize. But, you know, I am thinking more in the terms of the kill itself as being unique or impactful or very memorable and kind of like a one-of-a-kind type kill. Mine, including my honorable mentions, there's one on there that I'm going to cheat a little bit, and it would be considered more probably a death, and also the way you're describing, because it was a very central character that was very important to the story. But I left it on my honorable mentions because I didn't want to blur the lines there. So mine are all straight up, like, you know, the star of the show, so to speak, is the actual kill itself. And that's what you're saying too, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, okay, awesome. Maybe some blurring of lines, but, you know.
Yeah, well,
all justified.
It's fun. Either way, it's fun. So, you know, when you were doing your research, man, I mean, you know, everybody, my guests kind of cringe a little bit when I give them these topics because they're like, five? I can only come up with five? You know, we can't do a top 20 or whatever. So when you were doing this, I mean, I know you've been kind of labeled the horror guy, and you know, I love horror just as much as you do. And this is my time of year, man. So when you were doing your research, I mean, was this like they came to mind right away because they were embedded in your memory, or did you have to kind of dig some of them up a little bit?
I ended up with a list coming together really fast of just a ton, you know, and I turned on these like videos of like top 100 kill scenes or something on YouTube. And I went in my, you know, with my DVDs and Blu-rays and was scanning through going, oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
So I had a bunch, but I started to realize that they were kind of in categories. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I structured my list. I was like, okay, we got this category, so I'm going to take one from this.
Okay, you know? I got you. Okay. Well, you know, on the flip side for me, I kind of went with the memories that I have from the first time I saw them. And some of them were when they came out. And then some of them I was too young to see when they originally came out, and I saw them later in life. But I was still pretty young when I saw all of mine, with the exception of one that came out a couple of years ago. So they were just very impactful for me, and they just remain some of the most impactful horror scenes to me. And they are horror kills, but a lot of mine are also kind of character-driven kills, which is why I think it's cool, or why I think my list is cool specifically, because it does kind of blur the line between, yes, it's a memorable kill by the antagonist, but it's also memorable because of the connection to the characters that may be involved. And I think you'll see a little bit as it plays out what I'm talking about there. But I enjoyed it. I rewatched all mine this morning. I pulled them up on YouTube and rewatched them all. Some I had seen recently, some I hadn't seen in several years. And when I rewatched them, I was like, yep, they're still in my top five. So my honorable mentions, it was tough to narrow it down to five, as I said, but hey, we do what we can here, you know what I mean?
I'll narrow mine down on the fly. That's okay. How that's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. All right, man. So we're doing our top five horror movie kills. Jeff from Cadavercast is here for the third time. I'm so excited to have you, man. Did you tell Al that you were doing this list today?
We had talked about it. Yeah. Not today, but a few days ago, he was like, can I watch the stuff that you're looking at? And I was like, no. You go to bed.
Exactly. And my son was the same way. He was like, oh, I can help you research that. I'm like, no, bro. I see what you're trying to do. You can't do that. So he's always trying to sneak in, you know what I mean? But I got to keep his eyes shut for most of it. All right, man. So you want to get started? I tell you what, Jeff, I'll let you go first. You're the guest, buddy. So I'm a gentleman. So
all right.
And just to let everyone know, these are our favorite. So we're not saying that these are the five, you know, best horror movie kills of all time or anything like that. They're just our personal favorite. Correct, Jeff?
Yeah. With again, some blurring of lines there. I'll get into it. I mean, I'm also film instructor. I know. Like, the academic comes out too, you know.
And I understand that. And I feel like that kind of plays into your judgment a little bit too, which is awesome because then you have a little bit of both. But go for it, man. What's your number five?
Well, my number five is one that is not academic in any way, but really a personal thing because, you know, when I was younger, we didn't go out to see horror movies in theaters. It wasn't really until I was a teenager, you know, like 17, that I got to go see the movies that I wanted to go see. Mm. And so the first Friday the 13th movie I got to see in the theaters after watching all the rest of them again and again and again on video was Jason X in 2001. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was a huge thing for me to, one, just be seeing Jason on the big screen. But also, it was the first time ever that I was with, you know, put big quotes around it, that horror movie audience, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Not just like a group of people like going to see any old movie. Like, these were people out for blood.
Right.
And so, I'm in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where you don't expect to find this kind of crowd. But there's a scene in it where Jason, and it's the scene of the movie where he's going to kill this total random, and he dips her head in a like a bucket of liquid nitrogen,
right,
turns her face to ice, smashes it on the counter.
Yes, yes.
And that moment was amazing to see, but also like personally was incredible because I leapt to my feet. Right. Like I was out of my seat screaming and applauding. And then the rest of the theater was with me, you know, and it was like standing ovation mid Jason X for this kill.
Right.
And that moment just kind of solidified my, I don't know, horror movie freakness. You know, I like to go see these things with crowds and scream and holler, you know?
Yeah, sure. So. Great pick, man. It's on my honorable mentions. It's one of those that's unique. You can't say it was done quite like that before, and it hasn't been done quite like that after. So that's what I like about this list, is that you can really, you know, pick out a scene like, oh, man, that's the only time we're going to see somebody's face get dipped cryogenically frozen and then smashed on a counter, you know. And Jason just embodies that kind of, like, you know, of all the horror icons, which I'm sure a lot might get mentioned today, actually. But he's just embodies that just big, burly, just badass. I can kill anything anyway. You mentioned the sleeping bag scene, which is another great one. Great pick, man. It's on my honorable mentions. I love it. I love kind of the guilty pleasure kind of cheesiness of Jason X too. It's kind of it's very campy, obviously, and it feels like it should be in a different time, but it was in the early 2000s. So I love that movie. It's one of my favorite Jason movies too. So great pick, man. All right, so we're gonna switch roles here. I'm gonna be you. I'm gonna go back to the 60s for my number five. So you're an old school guy. I know you love that stuff. So my number five, I feel like, you know, I have a memory of when I saw it initially, and I want to say the first time I saw it, from beginning to end, I had seen, you know, bits and pieces here and there, and I knew about it in pop culture. But the movie itself, I was probably 15, maybe, the first time I saw it. And it's Psycho from 1960.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the shower scene, basically, when Norman kills Marion Crane in the shower. So from an iconic perspective, got to be one of the most iconic kills in cinema. And it's Hitchcock, right? So it's like it started a revolution where that type of jump cuts and the cameras closing up, and it almost coined the term, or started the coining of the term, Hitchcock-esque, you know? And the music swelling and blurring with what's happening. It's a very minimalistic kill scene. You don't see a lot of blood in it. Which would probably be my one gripe with it, to be honest. But this is all also 1960, so I know there were limitations back then for that type of thing. It's obviously in black and white, but just the revolutionary way that this was shot and how it spawned really its own kind of camera work for horror films going forward. And of course, Hitchcock is known as a kind of the foundation for that, or one of the foundations for that. So I love it. I love the TV show Bates Motel that started airing about 4 or 5 years ago. They recreated it with a little bit of a twist on that show, which I thought was awesome. And there was a lot of blood in that scene. So it was cool to kind of see it recreated with a lot of blood work in there. But I just think it's so revolutionary, and it was very impactful for me the first time I saw it. You know, I can remember my grandmother, who saw this movie as a young adult when it came out, saying how she couldn't shower. She was only taking baths for like 6 months after this movie came out. So just, you know, seeing it in the 60s, putting yourself in that time. And if you were able to see it in the theater, which of course I wasn't born yet, but the people that I know that did, it was just very impactful, and it had an effect on them, you know. So because of that, and because I can remember seeing it going, wow, I've seen a lot of these tropes and a lot of these, you know, the style of filmmaking in movies that I love, this is where that came from, you know? And it was just cool to be able to kind of connect the dots with that when I saw it when I was maybe 15 or 16 years old. So Psycho, the shower scene from 1960, is my number five. How do you feel about that, man? I know you're an old school dude. Are you going to talk about it later?
Absolutely. I will talk about it later.
Okay, all right. I'll let you pine over it later. I was wondering if that might be our one crossover today, so I'm not too surprised. But I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about it as well. All right, man.
I figured it would be the one that we crossed over on. It would kind of have to be.
Yeah, I just couldn't. I mean, I have to. It's just so revolutionary, man. I know you're going to talk about it later, but I had to throw it on there. So that's my number five. All right, so that swings this over to you, man, for your number four. What do you got, buddy?
All right, so this, again, category-wise, for me, I was trying to pick something really gross and really weird from an obscure slasher, you know? And I mean, that's the thing for obscure slashers, is they have to have something in them to make them stand out, which is usually a really gross kill.
Right.
And the one that immediately sprang to mind was from a movie from 1985 called The Mutilator.
Okay.
And in this movie, it's pretty unspectacular in terms of like slashers. It's gross. It's a small movie. I love it. It was also titled Fall Break, and it's got a theme song, but then they changed the title to Mutilator anyway.
Mm.
But there's a scene where the killer has one of those like big fish hooks that you would use to like pull like a swordfish into the boat or something. You know what I mean? Like a big hook you would hold with your hand. and he gets this woman down on a table and he inserts it into her groin and then pulls it up out of her stomach.
Yikes.
And it's the most gruesome thing. And the first time I saw this movie, I was actually watching it on a train. So I'm like squirming in my seat and there are people around me and they're like, what's going on over there? You know, like, but like you, I couldn't look away. You can't turn it off, you know?
Right.
It's horrifying and gross and from a weird little slasher.
I'll say I'm familiar with The Mutilator because it was screened here locally. A lot of that, I want to say, was shot in North Carolina. And they did like an on-set screening where they like showed it where it was filmed or where a portion of it was filmed. And it was at the coast. And I didn't get to go and I've never seen the movie, but I've heard a lot of things about it because it's kind of a thing here locally. But that's funny that you mentioned that particular scene because there's one of my honorable mentions that's very... I don't know. I guess I'll use the word disgusting in that way with a woman victim that I'm going to mention later in my honorable mentions. Also, when you're mentioning the hook, that kind of reminded me of I Know What You Did Last Summer. Is it a very similar like fish hook thing?
No. I mean, it's not
the same thing.
No, not quite. Not quite.
Well, now I want to check it out, which I guess makes me a sick person. But
you should. I like it. I have two T-shirts for it that I wear constantly.
Cool, man. So The Mutilator, getting a shout out. Here we go. Vintage Jeff. I like it. From 1985. That's your number four. All right, man. So my number four is definitely the most recent movie that actually will probably get mentioned today, but it's my most recent by a long shot. It came out in 2017. It was the new iteration of It, Stephen King's It. And the kill scene that I'm naming is basically the opening to the movie when Pennywise meets and kills young Georgie.
Hiya, Georgie. What a nice boat. Do you want it back?
Yes, please.
You look like a nice boy. I bet you have a lot of friends.
Three, but my brother's my best S.
Where is he?
In bed, sick.
I bet I could cheer him up. I'll give him a balloon. Do you want a balloon too, Georgie?
I'm not supposed to take stuff from strangers.
Oh, well, I'm Pennywise the Dancing Clown. Pennywise? Yes, meet Georgie. Georgie, meet Pennywise. Now we aren't strangers, are we?
Did you see this version?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the imagery, the cinematography, the rain falling, the way the camera in the sky, and you can see the kind of like from the rain's point of view when it's looking down on Georgie in his infamous yellow rain jacket. And Pennywise is being introduced to us for the first time since 1990 when it was Tim Curry. I love the Tim Curry version, don't get me wrong, but this is a different take and it's much more menacing in my opinion. And Skarsgård just nailed it, man. I mean, when I saw this originally back in 2017, I wasn't as in love with the sequel that just came out. But I will just die on the hill saying that Skarsgård as Pennywise is just as iconic as any of the old school slashers that may come up today. I just think he did such a great job of reinventing this. It's a nice mix of charisma and terror, especially in the first movie and especially in this scene. You know, he has that blank stare that he'll throw up right before he turns into the killer Pennywise. And then he's very charismatic. There's another scene in the sequel under the bleachers with a little girl that was very kind of a throwback to this for me. But this is just an infamous scene in horror lore, you know, Georgie and Pennywise. And I thought they did an awesome job at recreating it for this movie. And when he, you know, turns into the killer and the jaws show and he, I mean, this is a young child, bro. I mean, I don't know how old, I don't know how old Georgie was supposed to be, but I want to say like 8 or 9, you know, and he's literally getting eaten by a killer clown on camera. The blood's all over the street. Like I said, I already love the effect of the rain and the point of view there. And then he just drags him down underground with him. And that's the end to that 8-year-old boy that, you know, was so sweet and innocent and playing with the SS Georgie. And it's just kind of in your face, you know, but I just thought it was recreated so well. And it took that what we knew from the book and if you saw the miniseries, and just really dialed it up in terms of like gore and horror effects. So I love it, man. That's why I had to put it on my list as my number four. How do you feel about that iteration of Pennywise?
I totally agree. That Pennywise is really a strong, iconic figure. Stands easily alongside Tim Curry's, if not above, you know, depending on preference. But that scene, that opening of the movie, I mean, it all bets are off once you see the amount of blood. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, holy cow, now any of them can die. It is way gorier than I expected going in, that particular scene. So it's a really great start to that movie that just sets a really high bar.
Yeah. And did you see the sequel? Yeah,
I have not yet, which is all down to work schedule stuff.
So. No, it's okay. I was just going to say they do a similar thing to the opening scene of the sequel. I won't give it away, but there's a very, you know, in your face kind of like unexpected, I guess I could say, opening to that movie as well. So I thought they've done it very well. They've introduced Pennywise in both versions very well. And like you said, when you see the opening scenes, you're like, okay, this guy will do whatever. You know, he's going to kill whoever. So I just love it. Very iconic, the yellow rain jacket, the red balloon. Like I said, I already love Skarsgård's version of Pennywise. So that's my number four, man. Swings us over to you for your number three, buddy.
A related topic here. My number three comes from the category of children deaths.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So I like had a bunch where I was like, that's messed up because that's a kid, you know, stuff like Georgie.
Right.
You know, and to me, the most iconic of kid deaths in horror movies personally is from Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Okay.
Which a lot of people don't like because it's the one without Michael Myers.
Right.
But there's the scene where a character named Billy, I want to say his name is, he's wearing the pumpkin mask. Have you seen this one?
I have. I love it. Yep.
Yeah.
It's been a while, but I love this movie.
It's such a mean, like, it's just mean-spirited movie that, I don't know, it perfectly encapsulates Halloween for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene where they're showing the commercial to Billy and the mask turns his head into bugs and snakes and he dies in front of his parents, mm-hmm, is like the meanest, like, trick, prank thing that you could think of. And it's so perfectly Halloween and gross.
Mm-hmm.
And again, bugs and snakes, and it's the death of a kid. And I don't know, all of the elements here add up to something that you never forget. And it comes out of nowhere. You know, once they start killing kids, again, right, all bets are off.
Right. And you're right. And that's a theme that I'm going to be mentioning here in a moment as well. And it's on my honorable mentions where I mentioned it also. But you're right, because it's like the death of innocence right before your eyes, especially if they do it early on in the film, like we're kind of talking about with Georgie. I can't remember when this scene plays out in Halloween 3, but I do remember it. And I do remember that, like you said, it's just kind of a nasty kind of like, almost like a body horror type view where it's hard to watch. Obviously horrific, which is what we're talking about. But yeah, I like that one too. You know, I'm a Halloween fanatic in terms of the franchise. I love the one that just came out last year. The original's in my top 10 movies of all time of any genre. And I'm going to be talking about it here in a second. But Halloween 3 is cool because it's just like a one-off. It's just like it's its own thing, you know. Honestly, I don't even know why they call it Halloween 3. They should just call it Season of the Witch. But yeah, I understand it's connected. But you know what I mean. So great pick, man. So any more children showing up? You're on yours. It's okay. I'm just asking. I guess.
Well, one occurred to me, but a different kill from a movie where a kid's horribly killed.
I got you. Yeah. So I'm going to talk about a kid now, okay, for my number three. But I'm going to flip the switch here, man, and talk about it from the other angle where it's just as shocking if the kid is the antagonist and if the kid is the one doing the killing. Well, I knew this movie, and we're talking about horror movie kills. Anytime, you know, that comes up or slasher comes up, people that know me personally and know me well are going to roll their eyes because there's no way that I will go on a show without mentioning this movie. It's one of my top 10 movies of all time. I just said from 1978, John Carpenter's Halloween. And the kill that I'm going to put is the opening scene, which is when we're introduced to a young Michael Myers who kills his sister, Judith. You obviously know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, 100%.
So the kill itself, not that amazing if you're a horror enthusiast. I get it. There's very little blood in it. You do get kind of the gratuitous breast shot, which is a horror trope that has lived on for 40 years. So that's in there. But the kind of palpable tension that exists at the beginning of this movie, and people are walking into this movie in the 70s and seeing this, and I just got to imagine there was just such an aura of uneasiness, the way the music, I mean, John Carpenter's score for Halloween is one of the greatest scores in the history of cinema, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Just very tense, very brooding, and just makes you feel unsettled. I mean, I named the title sequence of this movie as one of my favorite opening credit sequences, and it's literally just that music with the pumpkin, with the jack-o'-lantern, and it's just like, you're just like, holy shit, like, you feel like you're going mad as the pumpkin's just, like, staring into your soul or something. But anyway, so the way the scene is set up, you know, you can hear kind of, like, the crickets in the woods and, like, there's the single jack-o'-lantern on the porch. And the way it kind of shows the house is almost an ominous figure on the street there. I'm sure you recall the scene when the bedroom light goes off and the music kind of swells. And he's just kind of, young Michael Myers is just kind of stalking his own sister, which you find out is a sister later in the movie. And he's just kind of walking around stalking her and her boyfriend, which of course ends up being the lore of Michael Myers as he stalks the babysitter. I mean, it's a very simple idea that they brought forth and they said, hey, we want to make a serial killer stalks babysitters and turn it into a horror movie. And that's what they did. So he eventually makes his way up to his sister. She's like brushing her hair naked, of course, which I guess no one does, but in horror movies, they do. In horror movies, they do. And he ends up stabbing her to death while he's wearing a mask to cover his identity. Of course, she knows who it is. And he just ends up stabbing her to death. It's very reminiscent, actually, of Norman killing Marion in Psycho, the same kind of tropes that invoked there, where he's just coming down at a sweeping motion with the butcher knife. And, of course, she dies. There's blood on her. And he walks out, and the parents come home. They take the mask off, and you could see almost like his conscience has kind of left his body at that point. Again, he's maybe 7 or 8 years old in the scene, and that's Michael Myers, and that's the foundation for what we know of that character as we've gone 40 years now with that character. So being that I'm a Halloween fanatic and it's one of my favorite movies, I feel like it's the introduction to Michael Myers. It kind of tells us, you know, where he started, where he came from, and I just love it. I mean, the kill itself is nothing elaborate or amazing from a horror perspective, kind of like the ones we've been mentioning, but I just love the impact that it had for that character and how we were introduced to him. So that's my number three.
Awesome. Great pick.
Where do you stand on? Well, I guess I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to wait till we get to the end because I don't want to spoil any of your picks, but I was going to talk about horror icons, but we'll wait. I don't want to spoil anything. What's your runner up, Jeff?
All right. So my runner up, category wise, is movies that scared the hell out of me as a kid, right? And there are very few movies that I remember as a kid like being so terrifying that I couldn't watch them. And there was only one actual like horror movie that I ran out of the room while watching when I was a kid.
Wow.
And so this is from It, which is the 1988 remake of The Blob.
Wow. Okay.
And when I saw this, I don't know, man, I must have been 7 years old or something. I have no idea. I was so young and way too young for a movie that is this like brutal, right, and gross, you know, having seen the original Blob. I think by that point, you know, I was ill prepared for how gross The Blob 88 was. But there's specifically, and this is the scene where as a kid I ran out of the room and hid, and we had to like shut it off because I was too terrified. But there's this character named Mark who throughout the first part of the movie is one of apparently our three main characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I had seen him as a kid in another movie called The In Crowd, I believe. And he was the protagonist of that. So I recognize the actor. And, you know, he's sort of in the Steve McQueen role at the hospital, you know, dropping off this old guy and like hanging around concerned about the old guy with the blob on his hand. But at some point, Shawnee Smith's character, that sounds correct, Shawnee Smith, walks into this room and they're like on a date. And she walks into this room and the blob is completely like surrounding his body and it's dissolving him. And he's shrieking and begging for help. And the only thing sticking out of the blob is his arm. And she takes him by the arm. And I remember as a kid thinking, oh, man, maybe she can pull him out of the blob. Mm-hmm. Right. And she pulls and all she gets is his arm, which comes off in a nasty mess. And that I got up as a kid and ran straight out of the room and hid behind a wall, like in a ball.
Wow. Oh my God, man. That's bringing back. I cannot wait to go back and watch the scene because that's bringing back like little deja vu memories, but I have not seen The Blob, the original or that one, in so, so long that I can't place it. But I do recollect ever so slightly what you're talking about.
Oh, man. And there's great kills in there, too. Other than that, I mean, there's a kid that gets horribly killed that's crazy mean. There's a guy sucked down into a sink drain.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Would you throw The Blob into like a creature feature discussion? I mean, it kind of is, right? I mean, it's an innocuous creature.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sort of a jelly creature.
Yeah. I would say so. I was talking about that recently. We did a fun little thing on the IMDb Journeys podcast last week, and we were talking about movie creatures, and I mentioned The Blob from the original. And I just haven't seen him in so long, man. So I'm looking forward to revisiting that scene. But yeah, I guess that would be tough for a 7-year-old, you know? So I'm glad to hear that you've kind of recovered and gained stability there, that you can talk
and
about
I also
it, talk about it.
Haven't
now.
Shown my 7-year-old, you know, he and I watched the original, The Blob, often.
Oh yeah.
But he's like, when can I watch the remake, Dad? Can I watch it next year? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You just wait.
My son keeps asking me for all this different stuff that he's seen, you know, around the house or whatever. And, I'm sticking to 12 years old for him. I keep telling him when you're 12. So I'm praying that he's going to be ready when he's 12, because I know on his 12th birthday, he's going to start hitting me up with bringing Blu-rays over to me on the couch and stuff. Like, all right, I'm 12. Let's do this, you know?
Yeah.
Right. So hopefully he's actually ready by then. But that's what I keep landing on. So we'll see.
I mean, I sort of tease Al with a little bit of stuff. Like the other day, I had to go pick him up from school on Friday the 13th.
Nice.
And I had been watching part 6. Mm-hmm. And I had to go pick him up, and I wasn't quite done with the movie, but I knew all that was left of the movie was, you know, Tommy trying to, you know, get Jason to sink to the bottom of the lake. And I was like, Al, do you want to watch the last 5 minutes of a Jason movie? And he thought that was the biggest deal. And of course, there's nothing in the last 5 minutes of that movie.
Right.
But to him, he was like, I have seen a Jason movie.
Right. I've seen Jason on screen. Right. Yeah. All right, man. Sweet. So sweet pick. And I love that I have you on, because I'm like, I got to go look at this stuff, man. Mutilator, The Blob. I got to remember these scenes, man. So thank you so much. So my number two, I know you're going to know, and it's also in my top 10 movies of all time. And it is also an opening scene. You know, as you were just talking about The Blob, I realized that 3 of my 5 are openings to a movie, opening scenes. We already talked about Pennywise. We talked about the young Michael Myers in the original Halloween. And now I'm going to mention the opening scene where Casey Becker meets her fate in Scream.
Oh, yeah.
When she is killed by essentially what we'll just call Ghostface. So, I mean, what can I say, man? You know, this, I mean, you obviously know this. Everybody that's a horror fanatic knows this. From 1996, one of the horror icons, Wes Craven, recreated the horror genre, reinvigorated it with Scream, and here we are, 25 years later, based on his kind of reinvigoration of the genre, and it was able to make money at the box office. People wanted to make horror movies again, so on and so forth. Soundtrack's amazing. It just cast perfectly in this movie. But just sticking to this scene, I mean, Drew Barrymore, bro, in the 90s is an A+ A-list actress.
Yeah.
That is on the marquee starring Drew Barrymore. And you go, this is right before the spoilers started to get super prominent in our culture. So people are going to see this in the mid-90s, and it made a ton of money. So a ton of people went to see it in the theater. And you see Drew Barrymore get killed in the first 5 minutes of the movie. So Wes Craven was ingenious, and Kevin Williamson that wrote the script were genius, because it obviously you think that character's okay, and you think she's going to somehow, escape in the classic horror trope, and she'll be the scream queen, and she'll survive, and she'll kind of be running from the killers throughout the whole movie, which of course ends up being Sidney Prescott's character, which we don't know at this point. So it was just ingenious that it was just like, you thought you were safe, and you thought Casey was safe, and then she's gutted hanging from a tree at the end of the scene, you know, and it cuts and the scream, the music swells. It's just amazing, man. The parents are screaming out in the yard. Her boyfriend's also gutted. So it's not like a simple, like, I'm going to stab you, you're dead. I mean, it's like an elaborate, like, gutting of these characters. And I also love this scene so much because it pays homage to all types of horror movies. We've already talked about Jason. You know, it mentions Nightmare on Elm Street and Freddy. It mentions Halloween when she's on the phone with the killer and he's going through all these different horror trivia questions. And it kind of is like poking fun at the horror tropes that exist in this scene by making it a basis for the scene. And I just love it, man. It's almost like a, it's so meta in that way. It's like a scene within a scene, you know, and like a, it's almost like a horror history lesson within this one scene. And then it, there's a lot of tension where she's trying to escape the killer with the popcorn on the stove, and he appears in front of the window. I mean, you know, it's just a whole, I could literally talk for like an hour about Scream. I mean, I love this movie. And this is my favorite scene from this movie. And it's the opening to the film. And it just really surprised the audience in the 90s because Drew Barrymore is an A-list actress and she's gone. So now you're like, holy shit. It's kind of like we were talking about with Georgie. You're like, oh my God, like nobody's safe. And I just thought it was awesome that they did that. I love Wes Craven too. So it is my runner up. Believe it or not, it's not my number one. But Casey's death via Ghostface and Scream. How do you feel about that, brother?
Man, I just rewatched the Scream movies, I don't know, over the course of the last year, and they are an absolute treat.
Yeah.
I think Sydney's character is incredible. The arc that she goes through, some of the movies weaker than others, but on the whole, those four movies have a lot to offer. And yet, like you said, this first one knocked it out of the park. I remember like it got re-released in the theater. That was the first time I remember a movie being prominently out of theaters and then back in theaters.
Yeah.
Because so many people wanted to see it again, you know, and that's huge.
And it was, it like went across all genre or all generations too. Cause I can remember I saw it in the theater and I was blown away. I didn't see the plot twist coming at the end. So I was blown away by that. Being a horror fanatic, I was blown away just in general that something like this was, I didn't have to see it on VHS. You know, it was something I enjoyed on the big screen. It hadn't come along in a while. And I remember my sister and I took my grandma to see it. And she was like into it. And she hates horror movies. But she loved it because it was like a whodunit. You know what I mean? So she watches all those CSI shows and all that crap. So she was looking at it from a perspective of like, who's the killer? You know, which is, they do a great job of kind of keeping that a secret throughout and keep you guessing on the first time viewing for that. And then the plot twist is just awesome, I thought, at the end of that movie. I personally didn't see it coming. Of course, my grandmother figured it out. So she kind of leaned over to me and asked me, you know. So, but yeah, Scream is just going to go down forever, man. It's one of the all-time horror flicks. And I love it, man. So it's my runner-up is Casey's death there. All right, man. So we're up to our number ones, buddy. I'm excited. You're bringing a nice mix here. You've I guess you're 80s so far. You're pretty 80s. Jason X was 2001, but
yeah, and the rest have been 80s.
Yeah, I like that, man. I like that. All right, so what's your number one, Jeff? This is your favorite. I guess this is, you would call it your favorite kill scene. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at least in terms of the complete package of everything that I'm looking for, you know, as a horror movie fan and a filmmaker, a screenwriter, an academic. It's got everything, and it's already been mentioned, but it's the death of Marion Crane in Psycho.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's so much you could talk about with this. I mean, we wouldn't even be doing this list if it weren't for Hitchcock making this scene.
Right.
You know, you're looking at a movie that's made during the era when we still had the Hays Code, when you literally couldn't show anything. And he made a really gruesome, graphic death scene without actually showing anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he also did something that every horror filmmaker strives to do, which is to make your audience afraid of something that they, by all rights, should not be afraid of, which is taking a shower. Yep. Which you already mentioned, which is hard to do. I mean, every time I sit down to write a horror script, I go, what's the one thing I'm going to do, right? Like, what's that thing I'm going to make people scared of? And I try to recreate that every time.
Yeah.
And yeah, again, all bets are off. not just in this movie, but for the rest of horror history. When Marion Crane died, Hitchcock set a precedent that in horror movies, the protagonist, or the person that is presented as the protagonist, can die.
Yeah, we're just talking about it with Casey Becker, yeah.
Yeah, and like, you know, that's for Scream, it was of course like a marketing thing, you know, she didn't make it halfway through the movie or 30 minutes into the movie, right. You know, which is great that Wes Craven managed to achieve basically the exact same thing, but through marketing, mm-hmm. you know, which Hitchcock had to do on a narrative level. Mm-hmm. But once you watch the protagonist of a horror movie die, literally any character in any horror movie from here on out can die.
Right.
And so he raised the stakes for the entire genre. And again, doesn't really show anything in the scene. Instead, he has to use filmmaking to make this mm-hmm. scene scary and effective. There are 52 edits mm-hmm. in that scene, mm-hmm. which is astounding.
Yeah, I just rewatched it today because I knew it was going to be on my list and I hadn't seen it in quite a few years. And I mean, I just watched the scene, I mean. And you're right, man. It's like those jump cuts and those cut edits, you know, and he's got the close-up of the shower head and there's a quick close-up of like her navel and obviously the drain in the tub. And it's really cool, man, because like you said, it just basically wrote a new law into horror movies. And we've seen it countless times since then. And I also didn't think about what you said earlier about, you know, making something every day that's pretty basic scary, you know, and Hitchcock. I mean, he's the man. I mean, the birds. I mean, who's scared of a bird flying around your neighborhood? You know what I mean? But yeah. No one until you see the birds. And then you're like, oh, my exactly. God, I'm being attacked, you know. So, he's great at that. And I didn't think about that until you just mentioned it. So I agree. That's probably got something to do with it making my list, too, because, I mean, we take showers every day. So, yeah, I love it, man. I knew we were going to cross over. I didn't know it was going to be your number one, but I'm kind of glad it is because of your background and where you come from. It says a lot that's your number one. So there we go. Psycho, Marion Crane's death. Did you watch Bates Motel by chance?
I have not. No.
I'm going to send you a link. If you'll, it's only like 2 or 3 minutes long. If you'll watch it and just tell me what you think, but they recreate the shower scene. On Bates Motel, and I want to say it was the last season or the next to last season, and it's very well done. I thought it was very well done the way they incorporate music from Hitchcock's era, and obviously they're not in 1960, so they have the liberty to show blood and do all that thing. It's shot in color, obviously, but it's a twist. There's a little twist on it, but I thought it was done really, really well. I'm going to send you a link, and I want you just to hit me up and tell me what you think. You don't have to watch the whole show to kind of get, you know, it's just a recreation of that scene, basically. All right, so my number one, man, and then we'll wrap up. So this is much like what you said about The Blob earlier. So this is the first quote unquote horror movie that I saw in my life. I can't remember the exact day, obviously, but I want to say I was about 8 years old. Okay. It was on VHS tape and I did a bad, bad thing that hopefully my son doesn't do in the next several months or whatever. But I watched it without my parents knowing I was watching it. I went to their bedroom at the time. I fell asleep in their bed and they were watching this on VHS tape. And I like literally was watching it peeking through the bedroom door because the way our house was set up, like their bedroom door led right into the living room where the television was. So I literally watched, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes of this movie just standing in the doorway. They never knew I did it. I literally had trouble sleeping for the next year because of the effect this movie had on me. I stopped watching it after this scene. So much like you said with The Blob, I ran away. I'm like, I'm going back to bed. Like, I can't do this. And I didn't sleep, of course, because I was, you know, scared to death. But it's the scene from 1979's Alien when the alien burst out of Kane's chest. So the kill is Kane dying via the birth, if you will, of the alien that was inside him. You know the scene I'm talking about, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I teach it every quarter.
Awesome. Maybe you can have some good commentary on it, because the only commentary I have on it is it scared me shitless as an 8-year-old. And I just, you know, I rewatched it today also. And I do rewatch this movie frequently because I love this movie. I've named it on a couple other lists we've done. I've named it on when we did Top 5 Creature Features. And I want to say I named it when we did a sci-fi list as well. But I love this movie. It's one of my all times. It's a classic. And I mean, Sigourney Weaver is one of the badass heroines in cinema, period, but definitely in horror cinema. And just this, like, you kind of get the jovial sense in the beginning, this group of friends is together kind of sharing dinner. They're joking about how the food sucks and like, you know, you just kind of get the sense like it's going to be all right. Like they'll be together. They'll work through it. And then all of a sudden, it kind of turns very, very bad very quickly. And I mean, anybody that's seen this knows, but basically the alien, a young kind of baby version of this alien, Xenomorph, pops out of, literally bursts out of Kane's chest. He's dead. And then they're all just kind of in shock. And it scurries off onto the ship. And then you kind of have the narrative that drives the rest of the movie that there's this alien loose on the ship.
No, man. I don't want to talk about what it's made of. I'm eating this. What's the matter? The food ain't that bad, baby. Okay.
You chill for Trump.
What?
Hey, what's the matter?
So, and it goes on, you know, kind of that kind of sets the narrative really for the whole series, to be honest, as you go into aliens and so on and so forth. So I love it, but, you know, it's number one on my list because that scene was the first horror scene that I saw with my own eyes. And I will never forget the feeling that I had from seeing it and from not being able to sleep for several weeks after that. So that's my number one, man. What do you, tell me a little bit about your angle when you talk about this scene.
Yeah, so when I teach the movie in general, it's to kind of look at, obviously, visual storytelling, you know, because I teach it when I teach introductory screenwriting. Mm-hmm. So we talk about visual storytelling. What can you tell the audience without actually using words, which the movie's incredibly good at. But what's really impressive about this scene is when you start looking at the structure of the film, it's the first death in the movie, and it's also exactly halfway into the film. It's the midpoint of the movie, which puts it like 52 to 56 minutes into the film, which is crazy late into a horror movie for a death.
Right.
You know, but you don't notice because like the rest of it's really ominous and, you know, it's got the gross, you know, face hugger on his face and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you don't notice it, but that's a brilliant tactic to not kill anybody of your very limited cast until the very middle of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I never thought about that actually, but you're right. You kind of get, that's what I was saying when they sat down to dinner there before it happens. You kind of get the sense that you're safe or that they're safe. I don't know. It's weird that it was because you really shouldn't feel that way, but you're kind of but you're kind of like, oh, yeah, they're going to be all right. Everybody's good. It's good, you know. And then it's like 10 seconds later, you're like, oh, God, no. What are we doing here? But yeah, my memories of it as a young kid and just the fact that it's just kind of, you know, and we'll come up with some here in honorable mentions for me too, possibly for you as well. But there's some movies and scenes and characters that just stick with you forever, no matter what. Like you can't forget them no matter how hard you try or what else you see or, you know what I mean? They just stick with you. And that scene has always stuck with me. So it's my number one, man. All right, brother. Yeah. So we're going to head over to social media in a minute. We're going to give some honorable mentions as well. But real quick, if you don't mind, just wrap up your top five for everyone real quick.
Oh, my God. Right. The
You have it there? Sorry.
Yeah, I do. No, the face smash from Jason X, the giant fish hook to the groin in the mutilator. Mm-hmm. The kid's head turning into bugs and snakes in Halloween 3, Mark getting all dissolved in the blob, and Marion Crane, the shower scene from Psycho.
Great list, man. My top five was same thing. Marion Crane was my number five from Psycho. Then I had Pennywise killing Georgie from 2017's It. Young Michael kills Judith Myers in Halloween 78. Ghostface kills Casey in Scream 96. And then Kane's alien chest burster scene from Alien, 1979. It's my top five. All right, so only one crossover there, man. I feel like we almost had to cross over on that one. I mean, that is the that is the kill scene, right? So I'm not too upset about that. All right, so I tell you what, man, you want to give some honorable mentions? You know I like to round out my top 10, so I had to limit myself, bro. So I've got five here, but do you want to go ahead and give some honorables?
Yeah, and I'm going to do, because like I said, I was going to do this on the fly, but you've mentioned a couple that I was like, maybe we'll talk about this, but you've talked about them, things like Alien and stuff. Mm-hmm. So let's go with Frank, his final being ripped apart in Hellraiser, mm-hmm. the Jesus wept, mm-hmm. kaboom. I love when characters, I describe this as characters getting Pez dispensered.
When, right. I see that.
When they like grab the top of the jaw and like rip the person's head in half at the jaw.
Yeah.
Which happens in Abominable, happens in Hatchet. So, I don't know. Shout out to Pez dispensering.
Shout out to ripping people's jawlines off. Yeah.
Yep.
It's good.
In Videodrome, a guy gets shot with a cancer gun and explodes with cancer out of his entire body.
Nice.
So that's crazy. And then Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, a guy gets killed with an umbrella. Just awesome. Yeah. I mean, another unusual implement.
Yeah, another one of those things. You never think an umbrella is scary. And then you see something like that and you're like, okay, I'm not going to use an umbrella for a while.
Yeah. And then this one would have been in my top five, but I didn't actually want to talk about it because it's 1989's Society.
Okay.
And it's a movie by Brian Usna that I can't recommend enough. But the problem is the movie works best when you watch it knowing nothing about it.
I got you. Okay. Because I haven't seen it. So
it's really mostly kind of a comedy about class. But, you know, there's weird mystery stuff going on underneath it. But it goes places that are very gross and weird. So Everybody should watch it, but nobody should look it up at all. Just Society.
Go in blind. Go in blind. Okay. All right. Well, I'm surprised, to be honest. We haven't mentioned Freddy, but Freddy's my number six. And particularly, I've got him on here twice in my honorables. And I couldn't sneak into my top five because those other ones meant so much to me. But when Freddy kills Jennifer, which is the face smash into the television in Dream Warriors, would be my number six. You're about to get your big break in TV. Welcome to the primetime, bitch, you know. So part of it's not so much the kill itself. It's just Freddy's banter. He's just hilarious, you know. I almost feel like if he was killing me, whatever he would say would make me laugh. I kind of be like, that's funny, bro, you know, that he killed me. So he's such a charismatic slasher, you know. So I had to put him in there. And then my number seven. So this is the one, buddy, that I would have been in my top five if it didn't blur the lines a little too much. But the movie Hereditary really affected me. It's one of my favorite movies of the decade.
Yeah.
And when young Charlie, the little girl, spoilers, I should say, because it's a fairly recent movie. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it for you. But spoilers for anyone who has not seen Hereditary, if you want to just hit the little quick ahead button there. But Charlie is the young girl driving home from the party in the car, and she basically gets her head taken off by a telephone pole. And Hereditary, a very... in your face, you have to be in that moment. And Ari Aster's a master at filmmaking, in my opinion, because he basically puts you in that car with her and her brother, and you can't escape. I mean, you can't leave. I mean, it's like a 5-minute scene of them driving home, silent. I'm sure you remember. So just a very affecting scene and very effective. So it's my number seven.
I'll tell you this about this really quick.
Yeah.
With Hereditary, I actually read the script for it before I saw the movie. Just one of those things of being in screenwriting and stuff. Sometimes you get that opportunity. And so I read the script. And when that happened, when I was reading the script, I gasped. I shrieked and then cried reading the script.
Wow.
It wrecked me just reading it on the page.
Wow. And then how did you feel that it translated to screen when you saw it?
I mean, I knew it was coming, so it wasn't quite as big a shock, obviously, it translates really well.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that movie. It's one of my favorites, like I said, of this decade. And then my number eight, you already mentioned, would have been the Jason face freeze kill scene from Jason X. My number nine would have been Freddy again, and probably the most iconic, if I had to put a label on the most iconic kill, which is Johnny Depp's character Glenn dying in the first Nightmare on Elm Street with all the blood kind of coming up through the bed onto the ceiling and onto the walls. A very bloody scene that really kind of just held nothing back in terms of blood and gore. And then you have Johnny Depp, early Johnny Depp, getting killed. So sure, it's on there. And then, what was that? My number 9, right? So then my number 10 would have been another recent one. It would have been when the Tyler family gets killed by their tethered doppelgangers in Us, which is from this year. Did you ever get to see Us?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, this is Elizabeth Moss and her family. There's four of them, the two twins and then the parents. And I'm sure you remember the scene where the tethered show up at their beach house there, their lake house. And it's just a brutal killing with scissors. And it's playing Fuck the Police by N.W.A. It's an awesome incorporation of music and comedy because she says Ophelia, which is like Alexa, call the police. And it's place now playing Fuck the Police. It's like, you know, and they're getting brutally murdered while it's happening. So you're kind of giggling, but you're also kind of in terror at the same time. So I think Jordan Peele is one of the definitely, along with Ari Aster, actually, we were just talking about, is definitely one of the new wave of like bringing horror back to life and breathing life into it. So I'm very excited to see what he's got coming up too. So that would have rounded out my top 10. And then, awesome. You know what we like to do, man? We like to go over to social media and get some shout outs. So if you're cool with that, I'm going to open up the suggestion box and do that real quick.
Let's do it.
And I'll try to mention some that we have not gone through yet. So I'll just peruse through them. So Gidget Von LaRue, I love her. She's over in Australia. She's been on the show before. She's got a couple on here that we didn't mention. So she's got The Kill from American Werewolf in London. That's a great, talking about the transformation scene. That is a great creature feature right there, buddy. You like American Werewolf? That's awesome.
Oh man, the new Blu-ray coming out in October. I cannot wait to get my hands on it.
Yeah, I agree, man. That's going to be good. And then I can't remember the character's name, but she's got another Stephen King based one, which is when Christine, the car, stalks the guy into the enclosed space in the alleyway.
Oh, yeah.
And ends up crushing his body. Just great horror imagery in that scene. Let's see. The Goods podcast over on Twitter says Tom Savini getting blown away in Maniac.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought about that one. That was...
Yeah, that is a good one. And the double barrel shotgun to the face there. What do you call the two things in the hospital that when you try to revive someone and you put the things on their chest to try to revive them?
Oh, the defibrillator?
Yeah, the defibrillator into the chest in the thing.
Yep, that was another one on my short list of like, but I couldn't remember if the guy died immediately. I'm sure he did.
Yeah, I think he was, I want to say he was already dead, but I don't remember, to be honest. I want to say he may have already been dead.
This was like 10 o'clock last night, and I was like, I don't have time to break out all these DVDs.
But that one came from Caleb over at Netflix and Swill, so thank you, buddy. The TV's Travis over on Twitter says he can't choose just one, but the Final Destination films were really inventive.
Oh, man.
We didn't mention any of the Final Destination deaths, but those are some very, he's right, inventive and unique. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I love those. Rube Goldberg-esque the scene, the better. Those are wild.
Yeah. And then we already mentioned the Countdown City Geekcast over on Twitter, CCG Podcast, had a gif of Johnny Depp getting engulfed by Freddy Krueger in the first one. Mike Marlowe on Twitter says Bradley Whitford in the Cabin in the Woods movie. I don't remember his death, I don't think. That's Joss Whedon's Cabin in the Woods, but I can't remember how Bradley Whitford died in that. I'll have to look that up.
I almost cheated and put the scene where they open up all the cages and let all the monsters out.
Yeah, yeah. Because
I was like, there's like 40 great kills in that one scene.
Right. Let's see. Matt Lewinsky is commenting every week. He's a great fan and contributor to the show. I'll just read through his top five real quick. He's got Colin Hanks in Untraceable, Frankenfurter in Rocky Horror, Jacob Goodnight in See No Evil, and Annie Wilkes in Misery would be his five. Rabid Raccoon Girl over on Twitter has another one from Dream Warriors, which is my personal favorite nightmare movie. But she's got the one where he's the puppet master and the guy, the guy's in the window and he cuts the strings and he falls to his death. That's a great one. Let's see. Marion Crane got a shout out from Classic Cinema NC over there. Jason X, I think you saw on Facebook, but Jason X got quite a few with that scene with the face freeze. I mean, it's just so inventive, man. I mean, it's got to be on there. All right, I'll tell you what. And then, you mentioned this already, but Ghost Rider podcast over on Twitter says he's going to have to ask the experts. But as far as slasher films go, he'll go with the infamous sleeping bag kill from the Jason movies. That is, that's good. I mean, obviously, we prefer the face freeze, but I feel like the sleeping bag one might be a very close number two, I think.
Yeah. I think if I hadn't had that theatrical experience of the face freeze, I'd probably go sleeping bag.
Yeah, I could see that. All right, so let's see. Drew Hallam. We love Drew, man. He loves both of us. So we're a big happy family. But he mentioned that as well. He mentioned the face freeze from Jason X. Josh Schaefer, a good friend of mine, and he's been on the show before, said that he loves that one, but he's going to go with the sleeping bag bashing. And then Peter from Podstalgic says the tanning bed scene from Final Destination 2.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he's a bit claustrophobic. So I would imagine anybody with claustrophobia, that would be just 10 times as frightening. Tony Dobbish from Take Two says Zombie 2, Shark versus Zombie. And then the wire kill in Ghost Ship. You remember that?
Yeah, yeah. I actually rewatched that last night. Just, I mean, I wasn't really thinking about it for the list, but I saw it on the Facebook and that conversation. I was like, oh, I got to watch that again.
Brandon Cruz echoed my sentiment with the TV or the face in the TV from Dream Warriors. And then Brian Loy, who is a horror aficionado from the Epic Film Guys. He's been on the show before as well. Here's the ones that he listed. The opening kill from Suspiria, which I still have not seen.
Oh, yeah. I feel bad. I had told my wife before I went to bed, I was like, I got to remember to put Suspiria on my list in the morning.
There you go. Well, at least we got to
totally forgot.
At least we got to talk about it. I still haven't seen that one. And then he's got the head explosion from Scanners, the chest burster from Alien, which I mentioned, Johnny Depp's death from Nightmare on Elm Street, and then no one will be surprised, but his number one is the shower scene from Psycho.
Classic.
And are you on Facebook? Do you know what that GIF is? I can edit this part out.
Oh, that Drew posted?
Yeah. What's that from?
I was hoping we'd get to talk about it. It's from a movie called Deadly Friend by Wes Craven. It was kind of like supposed to be like a kid's movie.
Uh-huh.
But or like a tween movie, but they were like, no, you're Wes Craven, let's add a bunch of gore and stuff. But it's about like a robot, like a girl that gets a robot brain or whatever, and she takes a basketball and throws it through this woman's head.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Right.
And just the effect is crazy. And you could just look up the GIF, Deadly Friend Basketball.
Yeah, Deadly Friend. I didn't know that was Wes Craven either, but I saw that GIF there by Drew, and then somebody else put it on Twitter as well. And I meant to go back and research what movie it was from, and I never did. So I'm glad you knew. But that was that GIF alone. You're like, wow, that's a great death.
The movie itself is not as good as that one scene. It's the best part for sure.
Yeah, maybe just watch the GIF over and over again, I guess.
Yeah.
So Justin from the Epic Film Guys, whenever I talk horror, I have to mention my boy Justin. He's a horror fanatic, much like yourself. He said he literally has a million. He was on vacation when we put this up, so he said he's just going to list the one that came to mind, which was the cryogenic freeze face smash from Jason X. I feel like that's anybody that's a horror kind of enthusiast, that probably comes to mind almost immediately when you talk about that. It's just so inventive, you know, so unique, and still is. I mean, I haven't seen it happen again. So,
yeah.
And then Paul, this will be the last one that we'll mention today. Paul from the Countdown over in Australia says the freeway crash scene in Final Destination 2 is epic. But the best kill in the entire series, in his opinion, is when the motor flies out of the car and chops through the guy in the convertible.
That's a good one too.
Yeah, that is a good one. Yeah. Final Destination kind of did what you were talking about a little bit, or at least tried to, where it took kind of like everyday things that people encounter and tried to make them like they could kill you, you know, like driving a car, for example, or, you know, well, there was that one scene I remember with the microwave and that one scene in the kitchen, just stuff that we use every day that we do every day. Final Destination kind of had a knack for being able to do that. I thought I was surprised. Yeah. I was surprised none of those kills came up today, but what are you going to do? Can't mention them all.
It's almost like the series is so packed with amazing kills that I found it hard to sort of land on one.
Right, right. Just Final Destination. Just the whole series. All right, man. Well, Jeff, you're the man, dude. I am so excited every time you come back. And, you know, one of these days I'll get you and Al to come on somehow, an appropriate list, and we'll have a fun chat, I'm sure, especially maybe as he gets a little bit older in the coming months and years. But I'm just excited to have you, man. Cadavercast is a great show. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, buddy?
Sure, yeah. So Cadavercast is the show that I co-host with my 7-year-old son. We talk about monster movies, and not just like the monster movies he can watch, but also monster movies he can't watch, where he just speculates on what he thinks they're about, and those are really wild. But we are on SoundCloud and iTunes, Apple Podcasts now, I guess, Stitcher, wherever. If we're not there, tell me. And we're on Twitter at cadaver_cast and Facebook and all that. So
that's it, man. Love your show. Listen frequently. And I appreciate you being on here whenever you make time to be on here. It means a lot, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's fun.
Yeah, man. So this was our top five horror movie kills. Jeff, I don't think I told you, but this is actually airing on Halloween, October 31st. Man. So people get some horror
teaching.
I'll be getting ready for Halloween, man. I'll be getting the house all set up and pumpkins carved and everything. I'll be ready to go, man. I've already got my Halloween decorations up, truth be told. So,
mine have been up since August 30th.
Nice. You got me beat, man. Nice. You got me beat by about 2 weeks. My wife was like, we're doing this? It's like September 15th. I'm like, yeah, let's go. Like, I'm ready. So
my birthday is on September 3rd. And typically, we're coming out of the end of summer when I don't end up with enough classes, to get all the money I want for the summer.
Right, right.
So, and my wife was 1 year like, what do you want for your birthday? We don't have a ton of money. And I was like, I want to decorate the apartment.
There you go.
And
easy
so
enough.
That's become tradition. Yeah, that's my birthday present every year.
Easy enough. I love it. Yeah, I'm trying to get my wife more of the spirit of Halloween. It's just not her thing, man, which hurts me. It hurts me. And I can tell my son's getting into it, so at least I'll have him to share it with as he gets a little bit older. So whatever, I'll be fine. And then I'll just have you on the show. It'll be great.
There you go.
Thanks so much. Happy Halloween to everyone out there. Happy Halloween season to any patrons that might be listening to this. We really appreciate you guys. We appreciate all the feedback this week. And of course, I appreciate Jeff from Cadavercast. All his information will be in the show notes. Until next time, guys, that's it. This is our final Halloween/horror-themed episode for this season. And again, Jeff, thanks so much for being here, man. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Talk to you later. Happy Halloween, everyone.
The jury about this fucked up incident. Fuck the police and Red said it with authority. Because the niggas on the street is a majority of gang. It's with whoever I'm stepping. And a motherfucking weapon is kept in a stash spot for the so-called law. Wishing Ren was a nigga that they never saw. Lights start flashing behind me. But they're scared of a nigga, so they mace me to blind me. But that shit don't work, I just laugh. Because it gives them a hint not to step in my path. But police, I'm saying, fuck you, punk. Read my rights and shit, it's all junk. Pulling out a silly club so you stand with a fake-ass badge and a gun in your hand. But take off the gun so you can see what's up. And we'll go at it, punk, and I'ma fuck you up. Think you think I'ma kick your ass. But drop your gat, and Red's gonna blast. I'm sneaky as fuck when it comes to crime.
You've been listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production. Support and subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/blazingcariboustudios.